Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
The average time a resume spends on an HR manager's desk is 7 seconds, and most of them are tossed aside. Now imagine if one of those resumes belonged to Yasmin, who was
living in a shelter, juggling 3 jobs. I had to be resilient. That's something that you can't teach.
Or if that resume was from someone who
worked 12-hour shifts at the recycling company with my dad, who's 72. That taught me a work ethic that I carry with me every day.
We rely so much on a resume, yet it could never tell the full story of someone.
Growing up where I did, a lot of things could have gotten in the way of my goals. But I learned to push through, and that's what I bring to work every day.
So maybe it's time we look beyond the resume and look to grads of life. Discover new ways to develop great talent that are so much more than what's on paper at gradsoflife.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Grads of Life and the Ad Council.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Obviously, this is not Aaron Flint. This is former Congressman Denny Reber. We've got our producer back, so we're hopefully back on the air. Will, are you with me? Will, are you with me? Will? Well, obviously, things are not working today.
You're solo right now.
Well?
Just you. Just you right now.
Just me. Okay. Well, Will dropped off the line. And so, again, Denny Reberg filling in for Aaron Flint. And lucky for you, Aaron's going to be back tomorrow, and he won't have the same problems that I've had with the board this week. He'll be able to cut in and out, and it has been a real pleasure. We talked with Senator McGillivray from Billings, who's going to be the majority leader in the Montana legislature. We talked to Corey Swanson, who is going to be the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Later on this afternoon or morning, we're going to talk to Rhonda Wiggins, who represents quite a few agencies and companies and groups in Helena. I'm going to have Mike McCoy with the Mountain States Legal Foundation to come in and talk about a Supreme Court case that he spoke on behalf of the Gun Owners of America. And he's out of Denver, Colorado, but it's important to the people of Montana. So we've had, I hope, an informative 4 days as I've hosted on behalf of Aaron Flint. We even did some fundraising for Warriors in Quiet Waters. We were lucky enough to have an anonymous contributor was willing to contribute up to $10,000 match for anybody that called in for Warriors in Quiet Waters. And we were successful in raising $16,645 for the organization. And what they do is, when I say holistic, I don't mean they cross their legs, they face the sun, and they hum. What they do is they take veterans and their families and mind, body, and soul, help them with journaling, counseling, and then they take them hunting and fishing. And the hunting is all archery. They've been up in the Bob Marshall Wilderness and other places fishing throughout Montana. Right now, they're ice fishing over in North Dakota. And they have people all the way from Texas up through Montana that are part of the Warriors in Quiet Waters. It's a great organization out of Gallatin County. They run out of a ranch down there. They have about 1,000 alumni that have gone through the program. It usually takes about 2 years. They have about 1,800 people that are on the waiting list. And so if you're so inclined to want to contribute to the Warriors in Quiet Waters, there you can donate at wqwf.org/donate or email them at info@wqwf.org. They're a legitimate organization. ExxonMobil is one of their largest contributors. Chick-fil-A has recently contributed to them. They have a $2 million budget, but they take contributions of $10, $25, $50, whatever anybody can afford, and they're definitely worth taking a look at. Again, that's Warriors and Quiet Waters. They're well-known throughout Montana. We also talked this morning to the stock growers who were in town, and I happen to have been a stock grower myself. I don't belong to the association now, but I did raise cattle when I became a congressman. When I ran in 1999, I had 500 head of cattle and 600 goats. I was one of the few goat producers in the state of Montana. I raised cashmere. When I was successful in winning that race in 2000 and going back to Washington, D.C., I needed to find a partner that could herd my goats, and I shipped them up to north of Helena and eventually ended up between 2,400 and 2,800 cashmere goats. And people didn't really realize that that's where goats came from, cashmere came from. I worked with Montana Knits, and we would shear the goats and separate the guardian hair from the cashmere. Send it back east to be spun and weaved and dyed, send it back to Montana, colored, and we would sell scarves and dresses to Lord & Taylor and Saks Fifth Avenue. So I've had a varied career over time, but I sure want to thank the people of Montana for having given me the opportunity to represent them. When I became lieutenant governor in 1991, I made the promise I'd be in all 56 counties every year that I was in public service. I did that under Governor Stevens and one term under Governor Roscoe. When I was elected to Congress, it became a little harder to travel to all 56 counties, but I did, in fact, do that. I'd leave on Monday morning and head back to Washington, serve in Washington, D.C., and then head back to Montana on Friday and travel the state of Montana and covering all 56 counties. I was lucky enough to be on the Resources Committee, the Agriculture Committee, and Transportation. And I got on Transportation because I wanted to improve airline traffic in Montana, get more carriers here, and cheapen up the price. Unfortunately, I was there during September 11th, and from that point forward, pretty much all we dwelled on in the Transportation Aviation Subcommittee was transportation safety. TSA. Oftentimes I have to apologize for TSA. I was there when it was set up. It doesn't look exactly as we had anticipated, but ultimately I got on Appropriations Committee and chaired the Labor, Health and Human Services and Education Appropriations Committee, about $845 billion a year. It was great work. I thank the people of Montana for giving me that opportunity. And as soon as we come back from our break, we'll be talking to Rhonda Wiggins. Again, thank you, Montana, for listening.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
King or queen for the day on housing policy and regulation, what would you do? I, for one, would resist the urge to add more policies. There are dozens and dozens already, many of which are expensive and totally ineffective. I'd pull the plug on things like the deductibility of mortgage interest on federal income tax, which do nothing to affect the home ownership rate and actually help people buy bigger houses. I'm especially leery of adding policies that help people afford housing. Not that people don't need help for affording housing, far from it. But such policies don't lower housing prices, they support low-income households. My King for the Day directive would be to focus on actions that boost housing supply. In fact, if people are talking about things that don't impact the supply, I'd table this discussion. We need to start measuring our performance in permitting new housing across cities and then prod those places to make progress. Growth restrictions are too popular for many places to do it on their own. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
This is House Call for Health. The anticipation is over for Spotify users. Music fans eagerly awaiting the drop of their annual Spotify Wrapped list, which is now out. The project summarizes each listener's music history for the year, capturing everything from their favorite artists to their most played songs, favorite genres, and more. Researchers say the way the information is presented helps spark engagement among users. Besides captivating marketing, Spotify Wrapped can trigger elements of social psychology. Some analysts compare this sensation to something called optimal distinctiveness theory. Dr. Ashani Banerjee is a Clemson University clinical assistant professor and social psychology expert.
We want to feel like we belong. We want to feel like we are part of a group. But at the same time, we have this kind of competing motivation where we also want to feel unique and distinct and different from everybody else.
For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, this is obviously not Aaron Flint. Denny Reber, former U.S. Congressman, former Lieutenant Governor under Governor Stan Stevens and Mark Rosco, and state legislator. I'm filling in for Aaron Flint today. He'll be back tomorrow, thank goodness. It hasn't been without some of the glitches, hitting buttons and all, and I just got to give him a lot of credit. What a great job he has done at the Aaron Flint Show, and we'll be glad to have him back on the phone with me right now. Representing the National Federation of Independent Business is Rhonda Wiggins. Rhonda, welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You bet. We heard earlier from Todd O'Hare with the Montana Chamber. I understand yesterday you were up talking to one of the other guests that we had on, Bob Story with the Montana Taxpayers Association. Tell us a little bit about the National Federation of Independent Business and then some of the other organizations you represent as well.
We'll start with NFIB. NFIB represents the small businesses across the nation. We have over 4,600 members in Montana, and most of our members have less than 5 employees. I'm going to actually start with some good news. I don't know if Todd mentioned it yesterday, but the Corporate Transparency Act Beneficial Ownership Information Reporting was actually, the Texas court gave it a preliminary injunction. So I assume many of your small business owners out there knew they had to fill out this beneficial ownership information that the federal government is requiring, and you needed to fill out if you're registered with the Secretary of State and have less than 20 employees and make less than $5 million in sales in a year, you needed to report this. The information is a little bit intrusive. Wants driver's license pictures and things like that, something they couldn't probably get if they wanted it out of other reporting. The challenge was that if you forgot to report, the fine was $500 a day and 2 years in federal prison.
Well, I hope my wife is listening, Rhonda, because she was particularly upset. We have 6 entities under our name, our LLCs, and she was pretty upset as an attorney, and that's just great news. Good job.
So NFIB challenged this law in Texas with one of our members, and yesterday Tuesday afternoon, the court issued a preliminary injunction. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean we won't ever have to fill it out, but it gives us a little bit more time to try to get the federal government to repeal this act. Because as you probably know, it's annoying to have to fill it out, but the really dangerous part was that if you move, one of your partners moves, or you close the business, and at the Secretary of State's office, if you don't report for 3 years, they just cancel you. In this case, any time one of your business partners moved their home, not the business, you had to report to the federal government within 30 days or you were in violation.
Did the Trump administration weigh in at all, the future Trump administration? Had they said anything about it in the new secretary?
They haven't. We haven't got either party to weigh in. So I don't know where they stand. We are still trying to repeal it at the federal level as well as challenge it in court.
So it's a good reason to join the NFIB because you're on top of it, and
That's what I tell young people. They say, well, how do we get involved? And I say, join organizations, whether it's your local chamber, the home builders, the realtors, the contractors. I don't care who it is. Join organizations. That's where you get some of the best information. You also represent the National or the Montana Broadcasters Association. Who are they and what do they do?
So the Broadcasters Association, I'm just the Montana Broadcasters Association's lobbyist. Dewey Bruce is their executive director. We're working on a number of issues with them. For the most important one for Montana probably is basically government transparency. As you know, Montana has some really, our Constitution gives us some really broad open government, open meeting laws, and we, but what our government does in Montana, a lot of states are envious about how open we are. And we work to keep that that open to not just the press, but to the people to see what's happening. There's a tendency to move meetings, to feel towards moving meetings into working groups or special task force and maybe not noticing those meetings to the public. That's where the real work gets done. So we work to build relationships with elected officials so that at every level, from your county commissioners up to and into the state government, to make sure that those meetings are open and to make them understand that really they're better off to let the public see what they're doing. The public may not agree with their final decision all the time, but if they see what they did to deliberate and the facts they had in front of them, often they at least understand how you came to those decisions. So we work on that. We're also watching AI legislation this session. There's obviously with AI, there's a lot of things changing, and there's a number of bills introduced and have been introduced in other states as well, and bill drafts that are in the hopper at the moment that would require the broadcasters to make sure the advertising had no AI in it. And that's kind of a heavy burden that we're not sure how to accomplish. So we're working with everyone to try to come up with a way. Obviously, we don't want you to turn on the television in the morning and see that you're sponsoring or advocating for something that you didn't even, a product you didn't even know you knew anything about. So we want to be careful that that doesn't happen, but we also know that it's difficult. So we're working through those processes.
One of the things we hear a lot about on the radio is that AM may disappear from our dials. Is that a real threat back in Washington, D.C.? What's happening?
Is. Yeah. So we're trying to get that, and FEMA weighed in recently on our behalf. I know that a bunch of the broadcasters are back there right now discussing this with legislators and trying to get a bill passed to make it that AM radio is mandatory on your dial in a car. And, you know, people who live in back east and other states don't realize that there's a lot of areas out here that cell phones don't work and we don't have internet access. And the other people don't realize, I think, is in a natural disaster like they had recently in North Carolina, the power went out, internet went out, and cell phone towers went out. All people had for emergency information was their car radio. And that is the emergency broadcasting system. We'd like to, you know, it's great that we go along for years and years and never have to use our emergency broadcasting system, but it is there for a reason. And it worked for FEMA in North Carolina. That was their only way of communicating. Well, so we are working.
You're right. You know, it really came home to me during COVID. I was traveling down to Yellowtail, and, of course, the kids are all home from school. And as I went across the Crow Reservation, I found out there were great big pockets of no internet. The only access they had to the outside world was their radio. And people back east just don't realize how sparsely populated places like Montana is. The broadcasters were always kind of special to me as a public official, because you were the ones that always had the very first debate of candidates. And I appreciated that because, one, it helped us hone our campaign stories so that we could get it out in front of the public. But broadcasters were the ones that really gave us access to the people and the voters of Montana. And I thank you for that. Some of the other organizations you lobby for in Helena, who do you represent up there?
Well, I also represent the Montana Water Well Drillers. And we're obviously focused on water legislation this session and making sure we're protecting senior water rights, but also helping the building industry grow the state of Montana, and we recognize we have to balance those rights. So we're working on a lot of legislation for that. And I represent the Montana Coin Machine Operators. They're the guys who own the gambling machines and lease them to the bars, so they don't have a lot of information, a lot of exciting stuff going on. We just it's a mature industry that mostly just keeps plugging along. There is one thing I'm watching for all the businesses, and that's the small business tax deduction at the federal level. And that is part of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act that Trump did passed for us. But the small business tax deduction that will affect about 9 out of 10 businesses and small businesses is set to expire in 2025 if Congress doesn't renew it. So we're working pretty hard to get all of Congress to renew that, as that's a 20% deduction that was Senator Daines was very active in getting passed, because he realized that the corporate tax deduction was not going to help Montana small businesses, and that corporate tax deduction is permanent, but the small business tax deduction will expire if we don't renew it. So we're all working on that for all of the small businesses I represent.
I can't go without saying that your last name is fairly famous in the state of Montana. Why do I know the Wiggins name?
So it's Wiggers, remember?
Wiggers.
There is an R there. But and my husband's actually from Illinois, not related to Lone Wigger. And they don't have an S on the last of their name, and they're way better shots than I am. If you remember, they are Olympic shooters. And, they're very way better target shooters than I am.
A lot of people have always...
They're also some great people. I've met a number of them, and they're a great family.
Yeah, a lot of people have always confused the two, and it's been kind of fun to correct them. Well, it sounds like you're very busy. Tell us a little bit about when does the legislature go into session, and... what are you going to kick off with right away? I assume you move to Helena, or do you commute back and forth? What's a day in the life of Rhonda involve?
January 6th, I'll move down to Helena, and I'll start the 90-day session. And we've already here. We're doing a lot of work on legislation. I'm headed to Butte today to work with the Bureau of Mines on some water legislation that will kick off. Probably one of the first things, I was excited to hear the governor speak yesterday about increasing the deduction for business equipment tax. That's in his budget, so we're hoping to work on that right away. And I think the legislature is probably going to focus a lot on property tax issues. So my role in that will be to make sure that although you get a tax break on your house, that doesn't increase your business taxes by more than your house break was. So we're going to work to make sure that those taxes aren't just switched to from one entity to another. And the governor is on board with that. He announced the Comstead exemption along with the homestead exemption for Montana small businesses yesterday when he spoke with the Montana Taxpayers Association. So that's all good news. I think we're going to have I think it's going to be an interesting session, but I think we'll get a lot of good work done.
Well, Rhonda, it's always good to talk with you, and thank you for all that you did with the NFIB. I carried the first legislation to lower the personal property tax in Montana when I was in the legislature in 89, and NFIB and Rhonda Johnson were very helpful. You are a great representative for NFIB, and thank you for being with us this morning.
Well, you have a great day today.
You betcha.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
This is not Aaron Flint. It's former Congressman Benny Rehberg filling in for Aaron. He'll be in tomorrow. We do have an app, KBUL app. I hope you'll access that. And on the line right now, hopefully, is Mike McCoy. Mike is with the Mountain States Legal Foundation, and they had a very important role most recently. Mike, you want to talk a little bit about it?
Hey, how are you? We had one of our Second Amendment cases went to the U.S. Supreme Court in October.
And why don't you talk about the fact that about, less than 1% of all cases are heard before the U.S. Supreme Court? They just don't have that much time. That's a huge honor that you were back there defending the Second Amendment gun owner rights, and congratulations on being one of 1% to stand in front of that court.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's very unusual. The Supreme Court receives on average every year 8,000 petitions for certiorari, which basically is our petitions asking the court to review a particular case that has been decided one way or the other in the lower courts, either the courts of appeal at the federal level or a state Supreme Court. Of those 8,000 cases the Supreme Court receives, they only typically pick or hear arguments in 80 of them. So that's about 1% of the cases that actually are applied for review by the Supreme Court. So to get a case in front of them is important and significant, and not just because it's difficult to do, but because obviously the precedent that is set by a Supreme Court decision really sets the tone for the entire country. And even though a case comes from a particular state or a particular circuit, once there's a Supreme Court decision on it, that becomes, in essence, the law of the land.
Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about how ridiculous the whole issue was and why were you even there having to argue this case?
Yes, so the Vanderstar case was what the left or the anti-gun groups pejoratively referred to as the ghost gun case. In essence, it was the ATF's efforts under the Biden administration to go after people who self or manufacture their own firearms, basically homemade firearms. They put it under the larger umbrella of firearms that do not have serial numbers on them. That's where the ghost term comes from, that they're difficult to track, they're hard to spot. But in essence, the rule that the ATF established in this case was really targeted at law-abiding private citizens who are continuing what is a 400-year American tradition of manufacturing their own firearms, or putting them together from gun kits that they are able to acquire through the marketplace. And so the ATF rule was changed against Congress's wishes, quite frankly. The executive branch on its own decided that because Congress wasn't acting to regulate these ghost guns, they were going to do it on their own. And so they changed the rule to say that gun parts, gun kits, and other inert firearm materials fell basically under the same regulatory umbrella that a completed, finished firearm that is sold in the marketplace does, meaning it has to be serialized, meaning before you can transfer it or sell it to another person, you have to conduct a background check, and all the other restrictions that apply to commercial firearms dealers. And so this was ostensibly done to try to limit the use of firearms in criminal activity, but these rules are, first of all, rarely targeted to criminals, number one. Number two, even if they are, the criminals are not going to follow them, right? What they're intended to do is basically continue to suppress law-abiding Americans' ability to keep and bear arms, a right which is protected under the Second Amendment.
Where's the case now? It's been heard. You made your arguments. Where does it stand?
So right now it's been submitted to the Supreme Court. We expect them to issue their decision in the case probably no earlier than February or March, but it could be as late as June. You know, the Supreme Court typically hears a full year's worth of cases, and then at the very end of their term, they issue a bunch of decisions, all their opinions, and that usually comes out in June. But sometimes in cases, they'll issue the opinions early. So we're hoping for an early decision in this case, but it could be as late as June of 2025.
Have you got any indication from the Trump administration or the incoming new president of would he be able to reverse that position? Is it too far down the road to be reversed? You know, where does all that stand, I guess?
You know, that's a really good question, and it's a question we've raised ourselves at this point in time. What do we do once a case has been argued and submitted to the Supreme Court? There's a new president coming in. There'll be a new ATF director, obviously a new attorney general. They may wish to, and I would think that they would, reverse course on this. But is it too late in regards to the Supreme Court issuing their decision? And that's something we're looking into as we speak. I don't have a firm answer for you on that. And also, you know, the case is couched as a Second Amendment case, but it really isn't a Second Amendment case. It's a separation of powers case, because the primary argument here is not necessarily related to firearms, but it's related to the executive branch doing something that the legislative branch under our Constitution is supposed to be doing, which is legislate. The executive branch in this particular situation decided that they didn't like that Congress wasn't requiring homemade firearms to be serialized, so they went and did it themselves. Well, that's not how the Constitution works. That's not how our system of government works. And so the Supreme Court, I hope, might take this case and use it as another example, kind of like the Loper Bright case, to basically smack the executive branch on the nose and say, Your job is to execute laws, not to create them. And if there's any confusion about a law that Congress previously put forward, then you go back to Congress and have them clarify it. You don't clarify it on your own. And so the Supreme Court may run with this case regardless and use it as another example of trying to keep the executive branch in its lane, because over the last 50 years, it's expanded its influence and role into the other lanes of government, the other two lanes, including the judicial and the legislative branch.
Well, having married my attorney, she always gives me the same answer when I say, are we going to win? She says, I don't know.
It depends.
Every lawyer, I think that's other than the fact that you take ethics in the first year, which I think you ought to take in the third year of law school. You take ethics the first year. You always punt. Are you a betting man? Could you tell from the questions that were asked by the Supreme Court justices which direction you think they're kind of heading? And if you do have an opinion, which judges do you think are on your side and maybe not on your side, just based on the questions?
Boy, it's always tough with the Supreme Court. You know, I tend to be, I have to be honest, a cynical person. So, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing when it comes to being an attorney, but I walked out of the court going, okay, I didn't like the tone of the questions. I didn't like, you know, how they were asking the questions. And so if you can read the tea leaves from the questions the justices ask, I think it's a 50-50 shot. But I was reminded by attorneys who have much more experience with in the Supreme Court arena, who said, you know, that oftentimes you walk out with that feeling and you're surprised on how the court rules, either in a good way or a bad way.
Was this your first time before the court?
This is my first time at the Supreme Court. Yes. Yeah. So I've been an attorney for 25 years, but almost all of that 25 years has been in the criminal field. I've been a prosecutor, and so I've argued cases, but it's only been at the court of appeal level, not at the Supreme Court level. So this is significant. I can't really, I'm punting your question like your wife tends to do as well. But I can't answer it definitively. But I'm hopeful that they come with the right decision here. And again, the overarching thing is making sure that the executive branch remembers its place in our system of government. And it's really important for the judicial branch at this point to put the executive branch back in its lane.
Well, we're real lucky to have the form of government we do. I mentioned on an earlier segment that as I traveled the world, I noticed that people wanted to be America, but they weren't willing to do what America does. They set up an executive branch, a legislative branch, but they usually stuck the judiciary under the executive. And this is one of those cases, thank goodness, the judicial branch is totally separate from the executive branch, the president and all the bureaucrats that are involved in that, and the legislative branch as well. We're lucky to have that kind of a system.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's interesting because the founding of the country, that wasn't really clear what the role of the judicial branch was going to be, or at least it threatened to be overrun by either the executive or the legislative branch. But it was that major case of Marbury versus Madison where the Supreme Court stepped in and said, hey, this is our place. Legislative branch, you pass laws. Executive branch, you execute it. And guess what we do? We determine if they're constitutional.
Yep.
So we have about
30 more seconds. I don't know if you can quickly summarize the Chevron case. Did you have anything to do with that? What is the Chevron case? And I think you would agree that's a good thing, right?
Yeah. So no, I know that the Chevron case is a case that's, I believe, about 40 or 50 years old. It was basically a doctrine that was established that said if there's confusion about a piece of legislation that Congress passes, the executive branch, in essence, has the right to kind of fill in the blanks and basically say, well, it's not clear, so we'll make it clear.
And the court took that away from them. And that
took it away from them, yeah.
That was an important decision. Just came out. We're thrilled with the Chevron case. I hope people will look into that. I sure thank you, Mike, for coming on and explaining that. It is important to the Second Amendment, and good day and God bless you.
The conservative underground meets right now. This is the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
Why won't Europe allow the importation of American food? Now think about that. It's pretty profound, isn't it? Because they don't like the chemicals. They don't like the coloring. They don't like the preservatives. They don't like the hormones that are used to grow our food, be it vegetables, fruits, whatever, and our meat. Why do people in Japan live 10 years longer than the average American? Could there be a connection between the food that we eat And can we improve the health of Americans, or at least give them the choice to improve it with knowledge? Again, as long as it's all, the choice will be yours. You can get the cheaper version and the hormones and the chemicals, or you can pay for a better quality.
Check out the Sean Hannity radio show later today, right here.
Hey, if you're scrambling to think about a good present for your loved ones, well, you can gift them peace of mind with a Burner less lethal launcher, or maybe just treat yourself. Now, with the Burner, you can be confident that you and your family are prepared to defend yourselves against any potential threat. It's simple to use. Now, the Burner launcher is safe. It is an effective defense solution equipped with powerful non-lethal deterrents, including tear gas and kinetic rounds. You also can hit a target 60 feet away. It's capable of stopping any perpetrator or attacker right in their tracks. Why choose Burner? Because protecting your loved ones should never be a compromise. Now, it's legal in all 50 states. There's no background check required, no permit needed, and it can easily be shipped directly to your door. Now, that's why Burner is trusted by over 500 government agencies, police departments, and private security firms. Just go to Burner, BYRNA.com/Hannity to get a 10% discount. That's BYRNA.com/Hannity. 10% off any purchase.
Did you receive a call or message that mentioned Social Security and demanded immediate action? Did the caller know your Social Security number or other personal information and tell you that your Social Security number had been used in connection with a crime? Did you feel worried that your Social Security number might be suspended, your bank account might be frozen or seized, or you could be arrested? That is not the Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, demand your personal information, or instant payment, email or text you pictures or documents, or use a real government official's name to gain your trust. Social Security does not accept payments by gift card, prepaid debit card, internet currency, or by mailing cash. Criminals use these forms of payment because they are hard to trace. Do not be fooled. Hang up. Ignore them. Report this criminal activity to the Social Security Administration Office of the Inspector General at OIG.SS.
All right, let's see here. Acuron Corn Herbicide. Powerful weed control? Check. Long-lasting residual? Check. Proven crop safety? Check. Acuron checks all the boxes, which is why it outperforms and outyields all other corn herbicides by 5 to 15 bushels an acre. Visit Acuron-Herbicide.com to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide.
Riddle's Jewelry in Shiloh Crossing and in Rimrock Mall.
Brought to you from the Hot Spring Spas and Hot Tub Company, Friends Recommend Studio. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
This is where Montana talks.
Well, obviously, Aaron Flint is not with us today. He goes over to Iraq, Afghanistan quite a bit as a National Guardsman. But this trip was at the request of his wife, which I think is interesting because we put our wives through so much. When I first became lieutenant governor, I said I would travel to all 56 counties, and I did that for 6.5 years. And then as a congressman, I said I would represent all 56 counties by traveling continually, and I did that. And my wife is the one that had to raise the kids. I'd come home on Sunday, get clean clothes, head back to Washington, D.C., and we just don't do enough for our spouses. And I'm lucky to have been married for 46 years. We jokingly say we've been together for 50 years, but four of those years, we did not get married because we wanted our parents to participate in our college educations. And they said if we got married, that was the end of that. We were on our own. So I'm glad Aaron had an opportunity to go with Jessica. Jessica used to work for me in my congressional office. She was an outstanding asset. And so they took a little bit of time. I really am glad that
Mr. McCoy was able to join us because that Chevron case was so important. I kind of caught him off guard. He did not argue that case before the U.S. Supreme Court, but clearly the executive branch under the Biden administration has taken advantage of us, I think. And I'm glad there's going to be a change because government has grown out of control. You know, a lot of people say that they wish that there was term limits, and the real term limit is the people of Montana and the people of America can make change. They can do that through the electoral process, and not everybody avails themselves of that process. And I wish they would, because it's hard to hear the complaints of people saying, well, my voice doesn't count. It does. I, as a state legislator, continually walk door to door trying to better represent the constituency I had at that time. I lived out on the ranch, but I ran at a district in Billings for the state legislature. It was interesting because my first term, the legislature was split 50 Republicans and 50 Democrats, which is very hard to do. Our Constitution says that whoever is the governor, Republican or Democrat, they become the speaker. At that time, it was Governor Swindon, so we had a Democrat Speaker of the House, and then we divvied up the various committees. We got first pick. The Republicans picked appropriations. The Democrats picked taxation, and on and on and on. And I was lucky enough to get on the appropriations committee, which is kind of unheard of as a freshman. I was a rancher by trade, but I got on the Health and Human Services appropriations, and I ended up kind of getting stuck in that capacity all the years I was in Congress as well. I served on the Health and Human Services, or it was called Labor H. Appropriations. It's Department of Labor, Department of Health, and Department of Education. So anything that having to do with those three agencies, I was the chairman of that appropriation subcommittee. It was about $845 billion a year. I didn't have control over all of it because it was the entitlements, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, Obamacare. I had responsibility that I could move things around of about $155 billion a year. And I had a fantastic staff, so I spent a lot of time on issues having to do with NIH. Frankly, I think Mr. Fauci should be held responsible for what he did with the whole COVID situation. And again, it's been a great ride for me, and I thank you. My time is certainly coming to an end as the stand-in for Aaron Flint. I'm looking forward to him being back because this is not as easy as you might think. So I thank the people of Montana for listening to me, and we have just about another hour to go, and I'll be heading off into the sunset. Thank you.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
King or queen for the day on housing policy and regulation, what would you do? I, for one, would resist the urge to add more policies. There are dozens and dozens already, many of which are expensive and totally ineffective. I'd pull the plug on things like the deductibility of mortgage interest on federal income tax, which do nothing to affect the home ownership rate and actually help people buy bigger houses. I'm especially leery of adding policies that help people afford housing. Not that people don't need help for affording housing, far from it. But such policies don't lower housing prices, they support low-income households. My King for the Day directive would be to focus on actions that boost housing supply. In fact, if people are talking about things that don't impact the supply, I'd table this discussion. We need to start measuring our performance in permitting new housing across cities and then prod those places to make progress. Growth restrictions are too popular for many places to do it on their own. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.